Access number 27804, Squad Leader Ian Blair, Real 22. Now, we're talking about an incident that sort of illustrates their bad navigation of the US 9th Air Force. Tell us, well, or all three stories, if you remember them. Can you give us some examples of their bad navigation?
Well, I wasn't looking. We went on a sortie to with Americans to bomb somewhere up with the Hook of Holland, and there was, as the phrase went, 10/10 cloud. So we went on and on and on and on. We were obviously well past the Hook of Holland with 10/10 cloud when they decided that they better go home. That was one instance. The second instance was the one I cite most of all, which was diabolical, really. Broad daylight, cloudless sky, early in the morning, Marauder fell out with engine trouble, and two of us attacking the power station at Rouen, which is just across the border, just a shade inside the French coast. This aircraft would turn around in a cloudless morning, turned out flying at about 12,000 feet, gradually losing height. He turned north, flew out into the middle of the channel, and turned right and flew east up the channel. We could see both sides from our height. We didn't have radio communication, unfortunately, but we could see the channel was getting narrower and narrower and narrower, and he was losing height gradually for some reason. And we flew alongside this guy and pointed, vigorously pointed left and tried to persuade him to go left. No, that wasn't good enough. But anyway, he eventually got down to a fairly low altitude, and instead of turning left at Dover, he turned right and finished up in the middle of Boulogne somewhere. We left him then. But the radar said he was still soldiering around at 1,200 feet. But, I mean, that was one classic. The other one was another case of attacking the Rouen power station again, and not the first time. There was 108 Marauders flying at 12,000 feet, and we were escorting them. And then by this time we got our Mark 9s, I know that, I remember that. But we were flying as escort cover. And we went up the Rouen, literally, and we, having been there before, we knew. We could see where the target was. We knew where the target was, and we thought, it's a bit... A little bit off track. I mean, about a mile off track, but nothing. He'll be doing a little bit of a right maneuver to get back on track again. Well, I mean, that's what a normal navigator would have done. Not so this guy, this wing of commander or whoever was leading this wing. He did a left turn away from the target area. And we could see the Eiffel Tower in the distance. And we had no overload tanks. And to turn a whole 108 Marauders or formation took an awful lot of sky. And the wing leader could see this was happening. And he just said, he gave a call sign. He said, 180 about, go. And we went about, and we went back to base, left them to it. We don't know what happened to them, but I don't think they had any casualties. But, I mean, there was a hazarding the whole of the wing, literally, because of a foolish... He could have moved over slightly to the right, and they would have been back on track. But that was the three instances that bring to mind.
Anything else about this time? Did you have any... I mean, I don't know, did you have many clashes with German... fighters, or
yeah, they were always there, but we never mixed them. I never had fired my guns in anger, actually, except once. That was later on, but I.
But so it was. You were there as a precaution.
We were there to entice. I mean, somebody was getting hammered somewhere. Probably the escort, the top escort, was mixing it. Well, we knew them because they were the Norwegians, mainly. The Biggin Hill wing used to fly as top escort, top cover, away up high, and we could hear when we had radio communication, we could hear what was going on, so we knew. But down below, our job was just to keep keep the opposition away from the bombers. So at the end of August, no, beginning of August, we moved to Newchurch. Did I mention that?
Not yet.
That was Ashford area.
Oh, yes, you did. You mentioned King's North.
Yeah, that was
that's Ashford
Newchurch
area.
Newchurch is a different place. So another airfield.
But also near Ashford.
Yeah, it's in the same location, yeah. That was 125 airfield. I see in my logbook. We were only there a couple of months.
And that was August and September, was it?
No, August to October. Yeah, 3 months, actually. We were still doing our low-level work and close escort work all the time. I mean, that went on and on and on. So that was just a new...
And had you got the new aircraft yet, the nines?
Not then.
Still 5Bs.
Yeah, we're still on 5Bs, clipped and crapped. I've got a note here when we first flew our 5Bs somewhere. Our nines, but we were King's North.
Newchurch, you mean? August.
Newchurch. We did quite well. We did quite a lot of work from Newchurch. Still the same escorts and escort covers. That was all we ever did, actually. Until October.
Were you suffering many casualties? I get the feeling not.
Well, not many. We had one or two over the period. I've not mentioned them. One or two over the period of time.
Now, what would cause what were the causes of the casualties?
Probably flak. Or alternative hostile aircraft jumped them, and mainly flak. We didn't have many casualties, but come the end of October, we moved out Detling. Oh, that was the winter that year, October that year.
Detling,
near Maidstone, it's near Maidstone, isn't it? Faversham. That Detling. That was at the end of October. We were still doing our escorts. I see here.
Now, it's around one thing that happens in October, according to these notes I've got. You've got your manual. You were commissioned in October 43.
Yeah, probably. Yes, I was, October.
Now, what was the background to you being commissioned? Do you know, was it? What caused
43
it?
October. What was the background?
Yeah, I mean, was it just something that happened automatically?
Just a routine thing, I think, because I had been... I was one officer by that time, in February.
So they just told you were... What would it be, a pilot officer?
Yeah, I suppose somewhere along the line, the squadron commander must have decided it was time and moved on. I think I was asked because by that time I got married, and it was more advantageous to me to be a warrant officer and subsequently commissioned. So I said yes. I had been asked when I was at 501 Squadron. I was asked, believe it or not, and I turned it down. I was asked if I wanted to be recommended, and I said no.
Why not? What was your attitude to being commissioned? You know, I mean, what? Why did you reject
off.
It? Why did you accept it? You know?
Well, I had an ambition to be a warrant officer. That was the ultimate, as far as I was concerned. I long-served airman. I wasn't really interested. Not basically. Then eventually, when I got to my warrant rank, that was great. I was really well off.
That was... When was that? That was... April, was it?
Well, it must have been up.
I'll look it up.
Got it up on the wall there, I can tell you. I don't know if I've got... Yeah. Oh, that was fair enough, because
yeah,
I
April
married,
43. So that was your ambition? So
yeah, I was striving for a warrant. I mean, that was the exalted rank, warrant officer pilot. A warrant officer in April 43, that's right.
And then you were commissioned as a pilot officer?
Flying officer.
Flying officer.
I don't think I did. I think I missed the rank. Flying officer, I think it was, yeah. And that was in October.
It was more important. It sounds to you it was more important to be a warrant officer
That was what I was striving. We were very comfortably off when I got married. My wife was a nurse.
Now, when did you meet your wife, and what made you? Because we're always interested. Some people decide to get married. Some people don't decide to get married.
Yeah, well, I met my wife in 1936 or 37. I met this girl in 1936, 37, and when I was abroad, I communicated the odd letter now and again, and there was just something about this young lady that I fancied, I suppose. And it wasn't until I came home from the Middle East and I tell a lie, it was after I had that crash, because when I was in hospital at Bovington, she was in hospital at Nottingham with diphtheria, and I was worried sick because I couldn't raise her, couldn't get in contact with her. But then it was somewhere in that year that we got married, 43.
Do you remember what month?
Pardon?
Do you remember what month it was?
Oh, it was March. Her birthday, the day before her birthday.
And it was just time to get married. I mean, it wasn't a question of waiting till the end of the war.
We'd never really discussed it. Well, we did. I think we did discuss it when we decided, what the heck, you know. So she was working as a nurse. She was quite happy. She was getting a fair old allowance. She was getting more as an allowance as a sergeant, as I was a sergeant, as she was getting a month as a nurse, you know, as a nurse UT. And so, I mean, it was, when I got warrant, of course, it kept going up when I became warrant officer. She had more money than she knew what to do with, she tells me, or told me. I mean, she was really well off. She could take all the take all our nursing friends out for lunch and things like that. Well, it was just one of these things that happened.
Now, how was it being an officer? I mean, because you were a long-standing NCO.
I didn't find out.
Was there an officer's mess? What was it like?
I don't know how I could say what it was like. It was, don't forget, it wasn't until we got to Detling that we really had a mess per se. It was all there'd been a tent up until that time. It was quite a good spirit. We had a great spirit in the squadron. I mean, the guys themselves. We had a wing by this time, and I did have a photograph. We chopped up on the wrote up on the walls in the usual mess fashion. Oh, I photographed this. I sent it up to the museum. A column, it was the wing, and it had 132 squadron and 602 squadron, and all the names were written on the wing. Oh, I was down at the bottom, pilot officer, flying officer at the bottom. But there was a great spirit. There was a lot of Aussies, a lot of Canadians, you know. It was. Yeah, well, I didn't have any.
Was it a hard drinking mess?
Well, yeah, I suppose it was. I didn't participate anywhere in the drinking stakes. It wasn't my 40. I mean, I always went with the guys when they went out with a stand down, but I used to pay my wife. But I didn't. I didn't like beer anyway, and I didn't like spirits. So I just soldiered on with the old shandy and made it last all night. But it was. Well, I enjoyed it. The life was good. We worked very hard, actually, really. When you look at the exercise, it wasn't until...
So in October, you're still on the same jobs, are you?
That's all we would ever do, actually. But when we changed our aircraft...
Now, when did you change
your aircraft? When we changed our aircraft, which must have been... it was in fact a cannon test. We changed our aircraft in October.
Now, what did you think? So this is to the Spitfire Mark 9.
Oh, fab. It really was good.
What was better about it? What were the improvements?
Well, the thing was, it was faster. It accelerated better. It had a two-stage supercharger, which you could control. The first stage Well, the second stage clicked in at 15,000 feet, so you were getting ground level power at anything above 15,000 feet. It was really good. It really was a great aircraft. I see here the first cannon test, that must have been the first time I flew it, was on October the 2nd. So from then on we were in a better situation. For jobs, we could fly escort cover instead of close escort, which is one up, and sometimes
not so often. That's high escort.
Yeah, it was covering the escort, the close escort, the jobs that we had been doing for such a long time.
What was it like doing high escort duties?
They called it escort cover, which was about 15,000 feet, I suppose. It was top cover was the one that we, it was right up high, but we never...
You didn't do that.
We never got as far as that. That was... got as far as that.
So would you use the same formation when you were on escort cover duties?
Pardon?
Would you use the same formation, the finger four, or would you use a different
formation? Yeah. You had the same... We kept this finger four all the way through from then onwards. It was a great manoeuvrability, but the escort cover could manoeuvre round the bomber formation, you know, side to side and up and down, right and left, or detach a section, whereas the close escort had to stick rigid, so when the flak came up, it was concentrated on the...
how much higher was the escort cover? I mean...
Well, 5 or 6,000 feet higher.
A lot higher.
Yeah, but then it depended whether you had a top cover. If you had a top cover, then you could be... You know, you could vary your high cover. I see here we did a high cover here, 12 Mitchells. Yeah. Quiet, it says. In other words, there wasn't anything about. That was the end of November. What date was that? Still at Detling. Detling was terrible.
What was terrible about it?
It was a peculiar approach. It was a grass airfield. And you had about 200 yards of tarmac runway and an incline, and then there was the camp road ran across the end of the tarmac where it finished, and then you had the grass airfield, which is uphill, and it was on high, it was on the downs over, you know, high up, so it was constantly covered in clouds. Oh, when the weather was bad, you had cloud base, and I remember the wing leader bringing us back from the other side, and the wing was the squadrons, two squadrons were in 12 aircraft in long line astern, and this wing leader kept bringing us down below the level of the cloud, and eventually we were below the level of the cloud, and the cloud was right down on the hilltops, and we were below the level of the hills, you know, and anyway our flight commander could see this happening. It shouldn't have happened, but it was all right for the guy up front, because we were down there anyway. He peeled us off and took us up through the cloud and brought us back down again, because it was terrible really. No, it wasn't the only thing he did. We haven't left the squadron yet, actually. We're still soldiering on, actually, doing our sweeps and our escort cover sweater.
Any particular missions you remember, or is it just routine? Fun? Just routine, is it?
Oh, they're all...
I understand they're dangerous missions, but I mean...
Yeah, they're all such things as 72 marauders, yeah. Being just escort, what does it say here? Escort cover. You know, we're going out as a gaggle. Escort cover for a shuttle service for marauders to St. Omer. We were covering them as they withdrew. It was the only thing I remember is, I haven't come across it yet. We were the Hague raid. We had mosquitoes. Did a low-level attack on the Hague, mosquito bombers. I don't know if you remember the incident where the guy put the bomb through the front door and the windows. Well, we were on that raid to cover the withdrawal of the mosquitoes. I haven't come across it yet.
Tell us about that then.
Yeah?
Well, I don't remember the date. I'll come
to it in a minute. But the thing of this, the thing about this was that these mosquitoes went in there like a dose of salts and pranged this place, and we weren't allowed to follow them in. We had to pick them up on the our task was to pick them up on the way out and escort them home. God, they're going fast. The mosquito, when it stuck its nose down, it's just a shed. We had an awful job to keep up with it. Yeah. I'll come to it somewhere. It must have been after. Definitely moved to Deathly, I don't know. Anyway, what time was this? We're still at, where are we? Detling, aren't we? Still at Detling.
Yeah. Any other individual raids or more?
No, they were all mediocre, all fighter sweeps. That's all we ever did, actually. It gets a bit hairy later on. At the end of January 44... We moved to the Orkneys.
Now, whereabouts in the Orkneys?
Skibray, Skeabray. Next to Kirkwall. And we had a flight up at somewhere further up on the Shetlands.
But now, why did you move all the way up there?
Pardon?
Why did you move all the way up there?
Rest, inverted commas, I suppose. The squadron was having a rest. And up there we did the usual camera gun exercises, interception practices. I did a scramble. Well, we set a standby readiness, a scramble. And what day was it? February. I was scrambled to intercept the high flying ME-109 on reconnaissance.
Now, what do you remember of that?
Oh, yes. Well publicised. It says here, 20th of February, scrambled.
Hang on, 20th or 26th?
20th.
And what exactly happened from start to finish?
Well, it says here, scrambled. 26 minutes to tally-ho and aircraft destroyed. 26 minutes. And what I wrote at the time was, climbs, I like this, the aircraft was a Mark 7 aircraft, Spitfire Mark 7, which had a pressure cabin and a different engine. Climbed smartly to 12,000 feet. Vapor trails seen at 12 o'clock. Hun turned and dived to starboard, indicated their speed 500 miles an hour, had two squirts at 1,000 yards, red two past me and closed to 300 lines stern, firing and missed. Well, his guns actually failed to fire, actually. I had a go, 3 seconds at 100 yards, starboard wing blew off, aircraft crashed in the drink, no sign of the pilot. Vectored by control, very good. Film taken, struck by pieces at the radiator, and consequently did a forced landing on Strondsay Island. I said here, good effort considering the last one. I meant the forced landing. Aircraft cutty, RT still working. 216 rounds of 20mm and 673 rounds of 303. So that was my one and only conquest. I always said
Anything you can add to that now? You know, just to colour that, because that's the bare bones, isn't it? And gives us.
Well, that was it. The thing was, we got to 33,000 odd feet. No, 38,000 feet, I think. This aircraft was phenomenal.
What, the Spitfire 7?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's got pointed wingtips, you know, and a phenomenal rate of climb. It really was. But unfortunately, when the damage sustained, this aircraft disintegrated, and I was struck probably by flying debris, and I the coolant started to leak out. So the thing I remember basically was I was taught on a Rolls-Royce course, if you cool the engine down, we were way over the North Sea somewhere, halfway to Norway, I think. We could see Norway. Beautiful day, that height. And sent a mayday, that's what we sent a mayday or something. And started cooling the engine down. Well, as I said, if you cool the engine down, you bypass the radiator and the coolant doesn't leak, doesn't go away. So I managed to do this and cool the engine down and got it back to this Strawnsea Island, but I wasn't going to make. That's a little bit north of Ski Braes. I put it down in this. When I say Strawnsea Island, it was about, you know, it was literally a field, about 1,200 yards long and it's about 300 yards wide. It was just a marsh, really. I mean, it was about 20 feet above sea level, something ridiculous. Anyway, my number two was still there, so I made approach. That's what I meant when I said better than last time. This time I had my harness well and truly done up. Well and truly done up. And I put it down in this peat bog, literally. It was a peat bog. And with the extended wingtips, the aircraft didn't stall easily. You had to, yeah. So I got it done. Sat on the ground and two radiators, you see, and just ploughed up all the, what do you call it, marsh, and came to a halt. And unfortunately, bang your head on the front. Two black eyes. Split my nose, the bridge of my nose. It was quite a common thing, actually.
Didn't your harness hold you back?
Oh, no, yeah. You still got a bit of flex of bang. Anyway, I called up on the RT, which was still working, said to the guy, I'm okay. I'm down, I'm all right. So he took off back to base. And I got out of the aircraft and walked 100 yards or so to Crofter's Cottage and knocked at the door. And there was an old lady opened this door, and she couldn't speak a word of English. She was just but Gaelic. Typical Crofter. She could see I was in trouble with the amount of blood I was. So she sat me down and obviously phoned for the quack, and the quack came. Almost instantly, he was only a couple of doors. Well, it was only a small island anyway. And he put a stitch in the front of my, pronounced me okay. And next thing is the old tiger moth comes trundling along from base, and who comes to collect me? Pierre Klosterman. So he put it down. He put it down in this marsh, and took me back to base. But I found out afterwards he used to go back regularly to that island because he'd managed to persuade them to produce eggs. So he said, run for the mess, he used to fetch the eggs. But he wrote this up in the big show as if it was his incident. I don't know if you've ever read it, but
what, that it was him that shot down the aircraft and crashed
in
the
bottom? He wasn't anywhere near it. Yeah, that was the thing. That's why I said it's author's license, but in the big show, It's headed tussle in the stratosphere, and it's Klosterman and Remlinger are doing the thing, but it's very fictitious. But I got a good reception from the Navy. The Navy thought, you know, as the phrase goes, the sun didn't shine out your backside. The Admiral sent for me, the Admiral made it known that he wanted to see me, so I was wheeled round to the Admiral's office, and he congratulated me. And said, well done, etc., etc. And it's worked out quite good afterwards.